Wow. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to what I was going to say was a Superhero Academy podcast. But you might have noticed, maybe you saw a different logo when you hit on this podcast. Maybe you're watching it on our Valhalla Movement YouTube channel. And the truth is that I am rebranding and shifting and changing the podcast. Now, I'm going to get into that in a second here and why I did that, why I'm moving back to and bringing back the brand of the Valhalla Movement podcast, as well as why I'm bringing it back to this YouTube channel and back to the days where I started this podcast back in 2013, which was a video podcast back in 2013. Can you say ahead of the curve? Yeah. No, but before I get into that, I want to introduce somebody who's now going to be a kind of a co-host and a producer of this podcast. Now, I'm still working with Kyler, who's, you know, the previous video editor. I'm still working with him on a bunch of different things. He's still going to be involved in the production of the clips and the reels and all the different things that go with that. But I really wanted to have somebody else who brings in a voice when I'm doing solo cast, but also somebody who might chime in on some of the guest podcasts. So with that, I'm going to introduce to you Leo Romano. He is a dear friend of mine, somebody who I've been working with and just friends with for a while. You know, we've been friends for a minute, and then he recently approached me saying, Mark, I want to get into marketing. I want to do more marketing work. I want to do production work. I want to help you produce a podcast. And we had a whole conversation. We've been working together for the last few months now. And finally, after a year of silence, I am bringing back the podcast in just a completely different and new way. It's not going to be that different in the sense that we're still going to cover many of the same topics. We're still going to go down some of the different rabbit holes, but I'll get into that. Leo, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
where do we start? Where do we start here when it turns into the podcast? I mean, there's a lot that we can talk about. But I think the first thing I want to give is a bit of the history of why I'm bringing it back to this YouTube channel, and a little bit of the background of the podcast.
Well, that's what the people want to know.
I don't know how many people actually want to know that, but fuck it. They're going to know. Okay. So here's a quick synopsis, long story short version of the podcast. In 2013, in 2012, I started The Farm. Now, The Farm is an 88-acre piece of property outside of downtown Montreal.
That's 88 acres, by the way.
Yeah, 88.
88. That's 88. That's thick. By the way, people, do you know how much that is?
It's a lot. It's about 80 football fields, right? So if you really think about it that way, I mean, we've got more than enough space to grow tomatoes and garlic and all the things that we need to grow over a long period of time. And I'll give you a bit of an update on The Farm throughout not only this episode, but throughout basically the future of this podcast, because now we're bringing it back to the Valhalla Movement. Now, why are we bringing it back to the Valhalla Movement? Why am I going back down this rabbit hole? And what is the history of this? So 2012, I start The Farm. At that time, I was a full-time videographer. When I started The Farm, I actually did video for a living. That's how I paid the bills for The Farm. That's how I moved out of my parents' house and moved in with a bunch of strangers. And we started what was called, at that time, the Valhalla Movement. Now, we called it the Valhalla Movement for multiple reasons. Why Valhalla? Norse Vikings, all that kind of stuff. Won't go into the history of the naming of it, but it's basically something you can say in French and English really well. And here in Quebec, that matters. You see, actually, Leo, you're going to appreciate this. I got a letter from the Office de la Langue Française, so that's the body that regulates whether or not people are using French to speak properly, and that everything you do has to be in French, completely translated. They wrote to me saying, your website's not 100% translated. I was like, what? What's not translated? Like, I was like, we have a French-English button. Actually, let's go show it over here. This is kind of the new website here. It looks like a lot like the old one, but there's some new features. But we have this little, you know, English button over here, French button over there.
Fair enough. Right?
If I hit French, everything turns to French. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Okay. But when I went to the visit page, we used to have a graphic here that was uploaded. It was a JPEG. And now it's showing up in French because we had to take this and remove it out of graphic format because graphics don't translate and put it into text, you know.
So they went into your site and looked exactly for everything that you put in English to make sure you also have enough. Every state had somebody.
Every single detail.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is where your tax dollars go. They have people searching into little farmers' websites to make sure every single word is translated.
They apparently got a tip about this. Somebody complained. So they weren't just, you know, they weren't just coming after the small scale farm and little community. Somebody complained. Now, I think I know who complained because it's the same person who complains about everything. We had the city come by the other day because we have dogs. Oh, you guys have dogs off leash. I'm like, yeah, we have an 88-acre farm. They live here. We're not going to keep a dog on a leash all the time. They run around. Oh, well, sometimes they go on the neighbor's property. I'm like, look, they're dogs. Like, they're going to see a cat. They're going to run over there. 99% of the time, they're right over here. And the woman who showed up was amazing. The dogs are so we had puppies that were born at the farm. Long story short, we had 8. We now have 5 of those puppies are still.
Yeah, I'm gonna put some photos up.
We'll throw in some pictures of the puppies and what they are.
They're adorable.
They're scary though because they're big black dogs. They're a Doberman and German Shepherd mix, and so obviously people are like, oh, okay, maybe this dog's a little intimidating. I get it. Okay, that being said, the person showed up to the farm. All the dogs are super chill. Like, they didn't bark. They didn't even... Only one of them ran up to her and just, like, you know, said hi. It was super sweet. All the dogs at the farm are so freaking sweet. And she was like, oh, this doesn't look like a problem at all. Like, you guys have 5, 6 dogs here, and, like, only one of them showed up to me when I drove into your driveway. She's like, what are you going to do about, like, the dog going to the neighbor? I said, look, I'm going to put a little fence over here, the one little section where you can go over to the neighbor's house. But I said, there's still a stream, and they could just go right into the stream and walk over, and I can't put a fence over the stream because it's illegal to do that. So I said, at the end of the day, I could build all the fences in the world, but I can't contain these dogs forever, and I'm not going to keep them on a leash on my own property.
So turning it back on them, it's their fault.
It's their fault.
Make government's fences fault. On streams legal, government.
No.
Whoever's listening.
Don't do that. Just don't complain. But this guy complained, and he complains because basically we play music. He complains because we have events. He complains about a bunch of stuff. And we had a bout with the city and a bout with the Quebec government. And I say bout because they wrote me a bunch of letters saying that we had broken a bunch of different rules. And, like, I think it was, like, 11 different rules. They had, like, 9 on the south side property, which is about a 5-acre piece where most of Valhalla goes down. And I think they had, like, 5 or 6 or whatever on the north side. So it was really, like, even, like, 15, 16 avis d'infraction or potential infractions where they can find me and do a bunch of other stuff. And they were saying, oh, you have a bunch of people living illegally on the property, even though if they're full-time farmers, I'm a full-time farmer and I'm hiring full-time farmers to support me on the property, I'm allowed to have them live there as seasonal, temporary type housing in what is called maison mobile. Now, for those of you who don't speak French, maison mobile translates to mobile home. Well, they've said, the government, well, they're living in buses and converted vans. Those aren't mobile homes. I said, well, what's the definition of a mobile home? And the funny thing is I pulled up the Office de la Langue Française and I found their definition of a mobile home, which was it has to be rectangular, it has to be on wheels, and it has to be able to move, it has to be able to plug into services. It
has to be rectangular.
It has to be rectangular.
Wait, I'm curious about that one.
I don't know why. Look, I'm not gonna get into it. But I went into the government's own website and said, "Well, look, a bus or van completely qualifies for this, right?" But they were like, "Yeah, but we have an ordinance that says you can't have a bus and blah blah blah. You can't build a structure or a house out of a bus." I said, "Yes, but this is a non-permanent structure, and this is the farm, not the city, not suburbia." So, as much as the government goes after me, you can also use the government's own stuff to make things happen. And back in 2013, when I started this podcast, as the Valhalla Movement podcast, it was Skin Valhalla was on the Valhalla YouTube channel, and I was using Skype and eCam. So I would go on Skype and I would put up both the two Skype screens, me on one side and then the guests on the other. And I made like a skin and I would export all of this, you know, through Adobe Premiere and all, doing all the different components.
He's a podcast OG.
We're approaching like the 100th episode at this point. So you know, I've been doing it, but I've been very inconsistent about it. And I'll get into why. Long story short, when we built when I started this podcast, we built what is called an Earthship. Okay. So many of you subscribe to this channel probably know about this Earthship that we built. Now, what the fuck is an Earthship?
I want to know too. What the fuck is an Earthship?
An Earthship is a building built out of tires, bottles, and cans. So the foundation is literally tires that we fill with earth and we put on the north side of the north wall, because the sun, you know, we're in the northern hemisphere here, so the sun tracks in the south, particularly in the winter, heats up through the sun, and it releases that energy into the greenhouse like a passive battery, almost like it stores into, you know, think about when you have cement floors and the sun heats that cement floor, the floor gets nice and warm. As it cools down, hot goes to cold, the hot leaves the floor and goes into the ambient space. Same thing with Airship, but it's built out of recycled bottles, cans, and a bunch of stuff. Now, that was the first ever bout that I had with the city, and we won because they were like, look, there's no way you guys are going to build an Airship here. Like, no, we don't. We can't make that happen. I'm like, yeah, but I'm allowed to build a greenhouse under a certain square footage. I don't need a permit, and it's for agricultural purposes. I'm building a greenhouse. They're like, yeah, but is it safe? I said, okay, well, what conditions?
What's not safe about it, though?
Yeah, but like, exactly. What conditions would you give me to make this safe? They said, you need an architect to stamp and approve this. You need an engineer, structural engineer, to stamp and approve this. And then, this is what they thought was the coup de grace. They thought they were gonna take me. Is you need a study that's going to prove that the tires aren't going to leach into the groundwaters, into the well.
Oof, kill shot.
And I was that's like, oh, how am I going to get it? Yeah, well, what am I going to do?
Build leaching a study? Tires.
Yeah, that's... but how am I going to do a study? So I went to the government website, and I said, where do these dump tires now? Maybe they've already done a study. And so I found Recyc Québec, the people who are responsible for recycling tires and tire dumps, and they themselves had done a study about tires leaching into the nappe phréatique, into the groundwaters and the well waters. So I take their study. I eventually find an engineer, and I walk in with their study and say, hey, you signed a piece of paper saying that if I had this condition, and this condition, it would work, right? So I show them the first two, and they're like, they're just licking their lips. They're like, okay, what did he do for a study? And I show them their own study. I walked out of there with a permit. 10 days later, the entire Earthship was built. We built it with a ton of different volunteers and different things. So that was the first building we ever built at Valhalla. Now, this is not a history lesson on Valhalla. I'm not trying to go into the entire story of Valhalla.
This is a story on how you beat the government at their own game.
Oh, 100%.
Using their own fucking rules. That's what this story is about. And 100%. That's why we love it.
Yes. And here's the thing. If you want to listen more about the history of the farm and the different things, I think about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I did two episodes, the history of the farm, and then I did the future of the farm episode on what was called the Superhero Academy podcast. Superhero Academy podcast. Now, okay, let's go into what Superhero Academy is and why I made it. Okay, so here's the old website of Superhero Academy. Now, at this point, it's basically a museum piece. It's got a nice look and feel. I mean, it really has all the different components. Here's that podcast, that little component of it. And then I built all these online courses, one of which was how to create a successful video podcast and a bunch of other things. I taught people entrepreneurship through the power of mentorship, right? So for me, entrepreneurship has been about the journey that I took, not only to start the farm, but to be what, you know, starting a marketing agency and a bunch of different things, learning videography, learning storytelling, doing all this work over a long, long, long period of time. I've learned what it took to be an entrepreneur. Now I'm at the beginning of my 17th year as an entrepreneur. I'm the month in, and I'm at the beginning of my 11th year as a farmer. My 11th year running Valhalla Farms, because it started in 2012 as a bare piece of land with absolutely nothing on it. It was a GMO corn and soy field, okay? That's the history. That's where we're at.
That's what it was? A GMO corn and soy field?
It was a flat field where they grow GMO corn and soy. So you think Monsanto, think big fields, whatever. You know. Right next door. Like if you were to, I think if I go, actually, let me go back over here. So this here used to be a field, but I think if I go back to the homepage, you'll see just a little piece of like, this is the GMO corn field, or this is a soya. This is soya here growing. Okay. Look at how lush our farm is. This is, you know, halfway through the season, maybe somewhere in like late May, June, something like that. And look at their field. It was dry. It was bare and it had nothing on it. It was completely flat. We changed the landscape over the years and we were doing things called permaculture and market gardening. Now, I'm not going to get into permaculture and market gardening. In fact, my next guest on this podcast is going to be Jean-Martin Fortier. I've had him on the podcast back in like, I think 2015 or 2014, something like that, when he first released his book, The Market Gardener, or Le Jardinier Maraîcher, which means making food for the market, growing everything you would generally find in a market, tomatoes, cucumbers, lettuces, radishes, carrots, all that kind of stuff, right? So he's the next guest on the next podcast. Now, that being said, we're going to talk about the state of farming. We're going to talk about what I've learned about farming and what I've learned about designing farms over the next few episodes, because the next episode after that, I'm even going to have somebody who's been working with me on designing and planning the farm from an architectural perspective and from a master plan perspective. And I'm going to go through all the different mistakes that I've made and the mistakes I still, to some degree, make from time to time.
Oh,
that being said,
Don't be so humble.
Well, no,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
We make mistakes. We make mistakes.
Absolutely. I just switched cameras when I shouldn't have.
You're learning, my friend. You're learning. Okay, so here's the thing. Why did I create the Superhero Academy podcast? This is a story nobody really knows, why I created Superhero Academy. First thing was, at that time, nobody was really a coach or online mentor. It was still a very new thing. But I realized I knew a lot more than a lot of my friends. I had a lot of friends because I started an entrepreneur when I was 18, running an indoor skate park. Long story short, I sold that, bought the farm. Okay. I had learned over already 6-7 years at that point when I started Superhero Academy, actually even 8 years, I think it was 8 or 9, 8 and a half years in when I started Superhero Academy, I had learned quite a bit about being an entrepreneur. And a lot of people come up to me and ask me questions. And here's the thing. When we started Valhalla, everything was kind of a democracy, and it was a consensus-type decision-making model, which meant that everyone kind of had to agree with everything that we were putting out and doing.
Code word for chaos.
And not everyone at Valhalla at that time agreed with me making an entrepreneurial course and kind of being one of the main faces of the farm. Now, even though I started the farm and I was a long-standing leader of the farm in many different ways, in many different cases, I've always been involved in the financial components of the farm, the legal components of the farm, and the structure of the farm at its base. But making an entrepreneurship course or going down the rabbit hole of doing webinars and doing a bunch of stuff that were popular online at that time or becoming popular online at that time wasn't really what the mission of Valhalla was. And so there was almost like a bit of an identity crisis where I really wanted to put all my energy into Valhalla and the Valhalla movement as a brand. And we called it a movement because it was based off the idea that we were building a revolution, right? Yes, we were building a farm, but we were really building a community of 150 people. We were really building a village. And we're still doing that. But what we did is we pivoted into more of the farm components and scaling the farm components for a ton of different reasons, mainly legal, but also fundamental principles, because if we're going to build a community, we actually have to start with the soil. We have to start the ground up, and we have to start with the basic things that people need to do. And I learned a lot about building community over the years. And I can explain that in depth, but I don't want to go there. Okay. So I started Superhero Academy as my own brand, so that I can make my own content, publish on my own, and have no restrictions on who can say what about whatever I was creating. Now, I interviewed a bunch of different amazing people over the years. Like, I really had, like, super cool, awesome guests. Like, I had James Clear on. So have you ever heard of the book Atomic Habits?
Nope.
Okay. Like, New York Times bestseller for, like, a long time. It possibly still is, honestly. Atomic Habits, I had James Clear on. He had a huge blog and kind of following an email list at the time. I had Simon Sinek, Start With Why, the guy who Start With Why, who has one of the most popular TED Talks of all time. I had Peter Diamandis, who started XPRIZE, who is now involved in the Singularity University. They actually purchased one of our subsidiary companies called Futurism, which my friend Jordan Lejuan started with another friend. Who met at Valhalla, which is such a cool, interesting story. So I had him on. He wrote the book Abundance. He also wrote a bunch of other different books. So, you know, I had, like, real guests, like, real people.
Heavy hitters.
I have interviews that I didn't even release with interesting people, with interesting folks, because of, well, reality is my kind of perfectionism complex, okay?
Yeah, don't worry, folks. We're going to get some big names and we're going to release them all.
Oh, there's definitely some interesting characters and folks happening. I mean, a couple of seasons ago, I had, you know, a YouTuber and Instagram star. She's Kathy Esquivel, or What the Sheik on Instagram. She has 2.4, 2.5 million followers. I mean, I've just had, you know, local stars. Matthew Giuffrida is an amazing comedian and actor here in Montreal. Look, I've had a bunch of people on the podcast. And it flowed and it shifted and it changed over time. And the podcast, once I went into Superhero Academy, went away from the farm and went into entrepreneurship and being a creator. And when I say creator, I mean like YouTuber or Instagrammer or influencer, if you want to use those words. So it went down that rabbit hole. It went down in those directions. And I always became really inconsistent because two things. One, I always spent so much time at the farm and all my money was going to the farm and I couldn't afford, quite literally, or at least I didn't think I could afford keeping my podcast going. Now, one of my biggest professional regrets in my life is that I didn't keep an episode a week since 2013, or at least, you know, with small pauses here and there or whatever it was. But I'm so freaking sad that I didn't do that, because at the time when I first started the podcast, it had a lot of fucking views. It was a lot of people paying attention, a lot of downloads, a lot of things. Now we've moved on to Spotify. We now have Spotify Video. We're published on all the different platforms, both in video and audio, YouTube being the number one place that I want this podcast to thrive. This is a video podcast at the end of the day, okay? We screen share. I bring in guests. We have, you know, high-quality cameras, and we're using Cinemaker, for example, this company that that enables you to make a multi-camera production very powerfully and live.
Check
on the spot
out.
Leo
switch cameras
Leo right is now. Literally behind the scenes switching cameras and editing this,
having fun
as we talk, right? So I found ways to make the podcast better and better and better, but as you make it better and better and better, you also become more and more of a perfectionist. The setup has to be right. You have to have the right, you know, I have a little cricket sounds over here, or you have to have a little sound if aren't right yet. Right, we spoke about changing these sound effects for this new podcast episode. We didn't do it
it's
yet.
It's coming. It's coming.
But guess what? I don't want to let good be the enemy of great. I don't want to let this podcast be about that perfection. And so now we're coming back, and we're coming back with a vengeance, because now that I'm removing and I'm kind of putting into the museum Superhero Academy, and I'm now going to be putting forward a brand new website. So by the time you're listening to this, it's already launched. We have, you know, so many more things that we want to do in our membership model. We're creating online courses that teach people how to build a community and different things there. We're launching a media, you know, fund where people like me and Germ and other people at the farm make really amazing content. We want to have our own version of a Patreon where you can support us directly and make content that's exclusive and that's really funny. My goal is that I don't want to be just a talking hen. I just don't want to have another podcast list like everyone else has. I really want it to be about topics that I consider to be different, alternative. I want to interview and I want to talk with what I call black sheeps.
We're getting down to the real issues here, folks.
Yeah, and I want to talk about like crazy shit, right? I want to talk about all the crazy stuff that went down in the pandemic. I want to talk about all the crazy things that happened with the city. I want to talk about farming. I want to talk about entrepreneurship. I want to talk about the struggles that I've had as an entrepreneur, and I want to listen, more importantly, to the stories and the struggles of other people who I consider to be those black sheeps and who are building movements and communities in their own right, right? Valhalla is about building tribe, and the movement side of that is about the stories and the content and the value that we create outwardly, not only physically at the farm, but now digitally as well. Because not only are we farming fruits and vegetables and garlic, a lot of garlic, lots and lots of garlic, 80,000 garlic this year, okay? Not only are we farming, you know, the ecosystem physically, we're also farming and building community digitally. And I've done a poor job as a marketing expert and as a storyteller, somebody who has all the gear, all the equipment. I've done an absolute horrid job of keeping you up to date with what is going on at the farm, what is going on in my life, and making that stuff happen. So Valhalla Movement is the old brand revived. Valhalla Farms went through different iterations. So the history is Valhalla Movement starts. We end up opening up a nonprofit foundation. Then we shifted into a farmer's co-op. As a co-op structure, we have the different people. Everyone has a share and everyone can vote. That fails because we just can't grow enough food. We don't have the infrastructure. We didn't have power. We had power. We had solar panels. We didn't have hydropower. We didn't even have a well. when we first started the co-op farm. So imagine trying to grow food without having access to water. Now, we had the pond over here in the far left corner. We can pump stuff out, but we didn't have enough power to pump stuff out consistently. All the different things that go with that, right? So now we've scaled quite a bit. Okay, we have a lot more infrastructure. We're growing more food every year since I decided that I was just going to put all my money and all my time into it, and many others did the same. And I really want to emphasize that.
Look at that. Look what happens when you put money and time into something.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, the grass is green where you water it. And that's really, you know, in the world of life force, the more you put time and energy and money into things, and money is a form of energy, well, the more the ecosystem grows. So what that looked like is I just joined as a full-time farmer. Like, I just went from being kind of part-time running Valhalla, doing, you know, marketing and doing a thing, to now I'm doing full-time farming. And yes, I still do consulting. I still support things on storytelling. I still do other things like that. I'm still an expert in marketing. I still have, you know, everything I've learned over 16, 17 year career as an entrepreneur and you know, maybe 14 years as a marketer. But I'm a full-time farmer, and the finances of the farm have scaled. The amount of product that we're growing has scaled. The amount of eggs, honey, garlic, just every possible product you can think of. Hot sauces now. We even now have hot sauces. It's we now have a delicious. Lot more fruit coming out, right? Think about it. 11 years ago, we planted trees, 2-3 years old, 5 years old, whatever it is. We're only getting the first fruits off those trees now. So,
what kind of fruits, by the way?
Every fruit that grows in this everything that grows in this climate zone. We're in climate zone 5B. We have planted, or we are tempting. Recently, I just bought peach trees that are zoned 5. So technically, they're supposed to survive here. But we have
Got somebody to make peach pie, I'm in.
Oh God, yeah, it's happening.
Come on. Man.
So we have apples, pears, plums, prunes, cherry trees. And then varieties from everywhere in the world. Those are our main fruit trees, but we have others. We have nut trees. We have a bunch of other things, but those take forever, so they're not producing yet in terms of nut trees. And then we have every berry bush you could think of, you know, blackberries, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, agouziers, you know.
What is that?
A bunch of berries you've never even heard of.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that. Agouziers.
Yeah. Sure. In some of our hot sauces now and the different things. So we have more and more genetics. We actually have kiwis. We actually have kiwi plants.
What?
Yeah, their kiwis can grow here. Not the Quebec green kiwis that you see. Yeah, not the green kiwis. Not green, the ones you see in a grocery store. But kiwis do exist in Quebec, and we can grow them. So we have kiwis. What else? I mean, we have a lot of insane amount of flowers, and we're now starting.
One sec. I'm still stuck on these kiwis. okay. What do these kiwis taste and look like if they're not like an actual kiwi?
Well, here's the thing. I've never tasted our kiwis because their plants aren't mature enough yet. They're growing. We bought them last year.
Okay, this is a TBA.
Yeah,
okay,
but what I can tell you is that they're actually yellow. There's some red kiwis. And they're just like, they look different. They're smaller. They don't necessarily have the same skin or the brown skin around them. They tend to grow green or a kind of different color. And with kiwis, you have to have male and female plants. So you have to have like, you know, they have to pollinate. So we have male kiwis and female kiwis.
Okay.
You know, many trees and many plants actually need multiple trees. Like, you can't just buy one apple tree. You normally have to have multiple apple trees to pollinate. Now, they don't all have to be the exact same apple tree necessarily. Although I think it does help. My personal take is that you do want to have a few of the same tree within a certain range.
You don't want any mixed race apple trees?
Look, we're not getting into identity politics of plants here, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to get into the identity politics of plants. You know, but here's the thing. All of this stuff that I'm talking to you about, I am still learning. Why? Well, because many of the fruits that we are now producing are producing for the first time, and only now are we starting to see that layer of abundance of fruits on the fruit side of things on a whole other level. On the vegetable side of things, on the market gardening side of things, I learned a lot from JM when we got his book, and so he, like I said, he's coming on as the next guest on the podcast. He's Quebec's most famous farmer. So I learned quite a bit from, you know, small-scale, intensive farming, from him, and now we're taking that to a whole other scale. We have a lot of garden beds, and we've barely touched, an enormous portion of our farm. And so there's so much more.
Yeah, there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room there still.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, a lot going on. Take a little, unsponsored coconut water break here.
Make sure that, yeah, you see, look at that. The label is turned backwards where it should be.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, I've learned a lot. And I started Superhero Academy as a podcast originally, then as an online school. And I realized that the coaching world and the world of entrepreneurship kind of ruined online schools. Because there's a bunch of people who put out a bunch of subpar stuff. And everything I filmed and created was filmed in super high quality with multiple cameras, multiple angles. I ended up using Cinemaker to start producing content eventually. Everything was designed to be funny and interesting and, like, truly to the real information, not, like, gatekept. Oh, buy this thing, but then buy my upsell and buy my this thing, blah, 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 blah. And I did events around the world. I hosted masterminds in Costa Rica. I hosted masterminds in Canada. We're talking like the last mastermind I hosted was 165 people flew from all over the world to come to an 8-day event, 4 days at an eco village and then 4 days at a festival called Envision. Right. So I've always been keeping this kind of 1 foot in the ground planted in let's say the dirt and 1 foot in the city and planted in the web. Right. And so it's always been a mixed, I'm a complex character. And, you know, it turns out like 48 or 46% of farmers have jobs off the farm. Well, I'm one of those people. Now, I farm full time. I'm there all the freaking time, more than 40 hours a week. And I also make content. And that's part of farming.
I mean, I'm also a little scared of the fact that our food producers have to have a part-time job on top of farming.
They all do. Many of them do, particularly in the winter months here in Canada. But they... Farming is just really, 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 really challenging. It's really, it's hard to be profitable. And you have to hit a certain amount of scale and a certain amount of experience to get there. And for me, that took 11 years or 10 years, let's say. Over the last 2 years, I would say we really started to scale in a big way, particularly last year. We really hit revenue numbers that we have revenue numbers and a profitability that is kind of beyond what most farms generally have. But I'm spending an enormous amount of money reinvesting because we're building a lot of infrastructure, right? So what I mean by infrastructure is like literally we built a road and we built a power, we connected power not only the south side
and a bar
a few years ago.
Built a bar.
No, it's a washing station. It's a washing station.
Built a washing station. Okay. Let me correct that. I'll edit that in post.
No.
Yeah. It's a washing station. I'm going to put a censored over my mouth.
You put a censored over over that word. Yeah. It's a washing station. He used another word, and it will be used for that. But no, it really, on the legal front, and this is back to the things I learned. As long as I play within certain rules or certain elements of the game, everything else starts to move in that direction. And there was, ironically, when the city wrote to me and the Quebec government wrote to me, they're saying, hey, you're hosting illegal events at your farm. And they wrote to me in July. And then in August, they came out with a new set of rules that invalidated everything that they sent to me. Because they said, oh, you can now host farm table dinners at your farm, 20 seats maximum. But they say 20 seats. 20 people eating maximum. So what if I did 20 people eating and then the second they're done eating, I have another 20 people already seated and doing that?
What if you have 20 people eating
and then 20 people just waiting for the next people?
Yeah. Yeah. Then the next 20
just doing a turnover. Like a restaurant.
It's like What if you do that? Is that allowed?
I think, well, nothing says that it's not.
So you can just constantly turn over the whole day, 20.
And we're now allowed to have 20 events a year with 50 people. And we're allowed to have a 4-day event with 200 people, permits needed. So this just changed the game. So between the time they sent me the letter and the time that I had to respond, because I created a bit of a delay, and you do, I'm the son of a lawyer. You learn a little bit about delaying.
Come on, nobody answers a text message
and
within a second.
And getting more and more time. We had to clean up. We had to do a bunch of other stuff. They were worried about kids locking themselves in fridges. They're like, what if a kid went into this old fridge and it doesn't have a latch? And like, you can't open it from the inside because it has a latch. You guys have to put locks on your fridges. And I was like, what?
That's the real concern.
Yeah, we're worried about the kids being locked in fridges. Yeah. Anyway, so these are the kind of things that I had to deal with. Again, I'm going to get into this later and how the farm, how we dealt with the city and how those conversations went with my third guest. His name is Pierre Olivier, okay? He's an architect. He's working with me, but he's also, he does a lot of other things. Anyway, episode 3 of this season, season 9 of the podcast, now called the Valhalla Movement Podcast. That being said, they changed the rules. So the rules are that farming is going more and more and more towards agrotourism, right? Particularly our farm. We're one of the closest farms to the city center. If you don't know Montreal, you have to understand it is incredibly close. I live in the old port of Montreal. My office, my studio is here in the old port of Montreal. And to get to the farm, it is about a 22-minute drive from the heart of downtown Montreal to the farm. It is incredibly close. And now the new REM, by the way, did you know this? The new REM is opening up. And it's expected to open up this spring. So I'm hoping.
Wait, the REM is the overhead train, right?
Basically Montreal is the biggest underground city. We have a big metro, and now we have the new train that's going to go right near the farm. We're like 5-minute drive away.
For those of you that are American, that metro is a subway.
Subway. Just, yes, subway. Now, and we're not talking about subway sandwiches here. We're talking about subways that go subway, underground, public train transit. Underground. So that's, going to change. Farmland has skyrocketed in value in the last 11 years. I mean, we're talking like 5x value, so that's good. There's a lot of things happening at the farm, and I don't want to go into all of those different components. What I could say is we now have an outdoor kitchen. We now have a washing station where we can kind of deal with all the dishes and all the different things. We can now host. We are now basically a venue. And we're a venue for people coming and doing agrotourism. People coming to learn about what it takes to build a farm and be involved in a farm and a community. And I would say that we're a bridge farm, meaning we're the kind of farm that people visit from a tourism perspective, but also from the perspective of their interest. They're interested in getting into permaculture. They're interested in getting into market gardening. They're interested in like learning about building their own sovereignty and their own food security. And with the prices of food right now and inflation and a bunch of other stuff, I get why.
And maybe they just want to see some chickens.
We're actually even getting pigs this year, too. I told you about that.
Yeah, you did. I want to see them.
This is a whole thing, right? So, to me, the discussion of farming, agrotourism, which is not considered farming, even though it happens at a farm and you need to farm for the agrotourism, not considered farming. Okay. So it's a rule I learned about. And, I had to learn about the different revenue streams and all the different things. And then, to me, the digital side of things. Like, when I rebuilt this website, and we're now putting online courses on how to build a farm and how to build a community and how to learn farming, like Jam's course, the Market Gardener Masterclass. Like, is that farming? Right? What if I spend my winters rather than doing a snowblowing job, and I'm making online courses and I'm taking care of the farm website and then making content and making a podcast. Like,
is that part of the farming field?
Like, if I'm doing marketing for my products at the farm, is that farming?
Is that farming? Oh, that's an existential question.
Right? Now, if I'm going to a farmer's market and I'm selling my products, that's marketing for your farm products. That's farming.
That's still farming, yeah.
But if I'm doing guided tours.
If
I'm doing guided tours, I'm doing it digitally, not farming.
Okay, yeah. These might have to be updated a bit.
Well, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. I mean, farms need to sell. And now more and more farmers are selling direct to consumer due to the pandemic that happened, right? They had to find new ways. Nobody was coming out to the farms and they lost a lot of tourism dollars. They lost a lot of different things. They had to find new ways because the wholesale market just doesn't work for farmers in many ways. Now, if you're doing large scale corn and soya fields, fine. But if you're doing small scale farming and you're trying to like really grow a diversity of plants and an ecosystem of plants, not just one specific plant, not just tomatoes or not just garlic or not just whatever. You're really trying to grow a farm that is multifaceted and has multiple products in multiple different ways. Well, guess what? It's fucking difficult. Scales of economy become a challenge. And the government doesn't really recognize that. They don't really understand that. So when I applied to build a house, they denied me. Not only once in 2021, because they said my farming revenue was under the co-op and also under me. And they said, well, you're not the co-op, even though I was running the co-op and I was like the funder of all of this. And it's happening on a legal level on my land, but it really is our land. I said, okay, let me retool. Let me bring it back. Let me rise the revenue, do different things, submit a house permit again. And they said, oh, well, the farm that you're operating on is actually too small to really make a full-time living. Even though I have a 5-acre piece that we're talking about putting a house on, and I have 19 acres on the other side that we're farming, and I have another 12 acres we're farming on the other side over there in a different way for different reasons. They said, yeah, but that's not your farm, even though you're leasing and you're controlling it, you've been running it for 11 years. That's not your farm. Your farm is this farm over here, and isn't making enough revenue. Now, I can tell you that we made enough revenue in 2022, and I can tell you that I've got a very interesting conversation going on with them. And won't get into it for legal reasons.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the easiest.
Let us know how you really feel, Mark. Yeah. We want to hear how angry you are.
They're full of shit. They're full of shit because they're antiquated in the fact that they don't understand this new trend. And I say new; it's an old trend. It's the oldest thing of the like, literally, like it invented sliced bread. You get what I mean? Farming was there before sliced bread.
Farming invented the bread.
Yeah, exactly.
That could get invented.
And then eventually the slicing of the bread.
Yes.
Was okay, great. So it's older than fucking time. And the idea of making and only looking at the economics of a farm from the perspective of large-scale farmers, like the farmer right next door, right, that GMO corn and soy field that's right next door. Well, the farmer who farms that farms about 3,000 acres. He doesn't own 3,000 acres, but he farms 3,000 acres with a small team of like 4 or 5 people. Like he probably has an admin person or whatever, but in terms of farmers, I think there's 3 or 4 people. So imagine all that land being pillaged and essentially used by only 3 or 4 people, only creating 3 or 4 jobs. And when in our case, we're creating an enormous amount of food, calories that people can eat throughout the year from all kinds of different products, the combination of different products.
What allows them to only use 3 or 4 people? Is it the equipment they have? Right. Is it the GMO?
Millions and millions of dollars worth of tractors and just the capacity and the GMO and the pesticide component that enables them to drive those tractors up and down to plant and to harvest and as well as spray. And to potentially water.
Okay, which they so don't a really, lot of it is the want. Fertilizer.
Well, they spread fertilizers and certain things to some degree too, but they honestly don't really do a ton of fertilizers. I mean, they add amendments. They do add amendments, but it's the use of the tractor.
Okay.
And now tractors drive themselves. You can put GPS coordinates, and you can have nobody in the tractor. Now the farmer who's doing right next door does drive the tractor. He doesn't have the GPS one.
Doesn't have a robot tractor?
No. And then what they do is they harvest it all and they bring it all back, you know, into silos and then store it and eventually sell on the market. So, you know, this is something I've been involved in to some degree. I've learned a little bit with that farmer, and we have a 12-acre field that we have not had the chance to turn into an organic food. And I said the word organic. That's another thing. We are an organic farm. We grow everything organic, but I cannot say that. So I have to say the words all natural because organic is like a brand and now it's a certification. And they've got these strict guidelines and then basically the government comes in and crushes you and the people are like, oh, it has to be this way and that way. And organic doesn't necessarily mean better. Okay, it does mean better than GMO from the perspective of pesticides. But a tomato is GMO too. Selective breeding means GMO. Okay, you are genetically choosing what you are doing and growing. So a lot of different things are GMOs. Okay, that being said, we do all and we grow ancestral plants. We grow ancestral seeds or heirloom seeds or different, you know, things like that. We tend to grow the most, like, you know, I'm gonna say hippie way of growing, and we do it all organic with absolutely no chemicals whatsoever, period, whether they're organic or not. None. We use no herbicides, no pesticides, no nothing. We grow 100% natural. We put it in the ground, and we water it, and we add compost tea, which means we add compost, and we add extracts of compost that we add to the plants. That's it.
Sounds pretty hippie to me.
It is. Yep. It is. Yep. It's an idealist kind of mentality because that's where the farm started. we were building a revolution.
I think it's beautiful.
We wanted to build something that was, in a weird way, almost like anti-capitalist. Now, that doesn't mean communist. That doesn't mean socialist. It just meant we wanted self-empowerment. We didn't want our entire life to be about how much money we can make and how much taxes we can pay and what job we can do. We wanted a life where we were self-empowered and sovereign in food, water, power, you know, freedom of expression, freedom to move, freedom to... what we call freedom culture.
Freedom.
Okay? No. And so freedom culture is to empower and encourage all individuals to spread their unique gifts to the world. Now, I want to show you back the website of Superhero Academy. Okay? That is the core element of what this website and what this was about. See, we proliferate freedom culture, a collective state of being that empowers and encourages all individuals to spread their unique gifts to the world. See, Valhalla and Superhero Academy and the podcast was always about building a movement on our farm, but really in you, in your own life, in your own way of seeking freedom and of building tribe and community and building through the arts, through whatever it is that you're talented in or whatever it is that you're passionate about, whether it be a hobby or something you're doing professionally or your hobby that turns into a profession. Our goal was to empower people to follow that bliss, to follow those dreams, to bring those unique gifts to the forefront and to be paid or rewarded or seen and recognized for that. And that has always been at the core of Valhalla, whether it was under Valhalla Movement brand, Valhalla Co-op Farms, and now what is called Film Valhalla or Valhalla Farms, period, and Superhero Academy. It has always been the purpose of this podcast and my personal purpose to support people like you on that journey. That's why I continue to do mentorships. Now I tend to focus on, you know, people wanting to come into storytelling, but I also do mentorships at the farm now. Okay, people want to live this lifestyle, want to learn those different things. But it's number one reason why I farm is that I wanted to find a way to truly empower myself and a community of people around me. And, you know, why I got into all of this, why I wanted a revolution in the first place is because I watched way too many documentaries and so many other people did too. We were just learning about all the crazy shit that was going on in the world. And in the last couple of years, it got a little bit fucking crazier. Okay? So it's always been about self-empowerment and freedom and culture and community and starting with the soil and realizing that farming is about soil health. It is about our personal health. It is about the tribe's health. It is about building community. So what do we do at the farm? Well, we don't just farm. We do all of these things. We host men's and women's circles. We host gatherings. We host, you know, tours. We show people around. We do farm table dinners. We do a bunch of stuff that relates to living that type of lifestyle that starts at farming, but that is much more than just farming. And making content and telling stories and making websites and making a podcast is about more people getting involved in this. And the statistics are dire when it comes to successions of existing farms, the average age of farmers, and a bunch of other stuff. And I'm going to dive into this, and I'm going to show these statistics to JM on the next episode. So please hit that subscribe button. Please realize that this podcast is now going to live on the Valhalla Movement YouTube channel. Please understand that, yes, you have audio versions, all these different things, okay? I don't need to plug it. You can find it, and it's going to be available on our website. You're going to see all the different episodes. We're going to use a bunch of different things, and now we're going to deploy, and we're going to bring in, with this, things like AI, right? Like, we're going to send out an email every time we have a podcast. How are we going to write that email? Well, we're going to write the basis of it, we're going to make a podcast, and we're going to say, hey, watch this and write an email.
Send the army of robots.
Send an army of robots. So is robots part of farming? Well, hey, the self-driving tractor. Well,
yeah.
Right? Self-driving tractor is a part of farming. If the tractor drives itself, are you a farmer? Are you a farmer just by owning the tractor?
The tractor's the farmer.
Right? Right? If you just own the piece of equipment that goes up and down the field and that's your primary business, I guess that's maybe where I answer my question. But are you a farmer? I guess it's because you know how to operate the tractor and then you sell the food and you do the thing. You're still doing some
what
portion
if,
of
what
it.
If the program in the tractor already knows it anyway? You're just the person who buys it and puts it in the field. Are you still a farmer?
I don't know. I don't know where a farm and a farmer starts and ends. But to me, I'd like to redefine what that looks like, because I truly believe that all of us should be involved in farming. You know, I think that that's important. I think it's important for us to consider where our food comes from, what it's doing for us or what it's not doing for us, how it's hurting us or how it's helping us. You know, the farm was the original pharmacy. And the farm is, to me, the basis of community. And so it's breaking bread, so is food, so is all the different things that happen on a farm. And they're all incredibly vital and important. And so where does that start and end? Where should it start and end?
So, Mark, yeah. What is your stance on farming crickets?
On farming crickets? Here, I got the little crickets down. It's going to happen. It's already popular in Asia and other different places, and it's continuing to be more and more popular here. I do believe a lot of people are going to eat less meat in the future because of the PR of meat and the PR of the way that we are kind of approaching the conversation around climate change. And I do believe the climate is changing. I do believe certain things are happening, but I do believe that the politics of climate change are also a way to remove certain freedoms and to replace them and to do a bunch of different crazy things that I don't necessarily agree with.
Well, I mean, I certainly won't be reducing my meat consumption.
Well, it's sure. So what is going to happen is you're going to pay more for it, right? So a lot of people don't know this, but farming carbon taxes are now rising dramatically in Canada. So last year, carbon taxes were about $50 per carbon ton. Now, carbon taxes are $65 per carbon ton, and they're going to continue to rise until 2030, all the way to $170 a carbon ton.
Fun.
Now, what that means for the world of farming is, number one, the tax is a tax that you pay a tax on. You actually pay taxes on the taxes when it comes to carbon taxes. You actually pay GST, PST on the carbon tax. But what that means is everything that goes into farming, electricity, fuel, the machinery that you buy, the driving to and from the location, the bringing of it to the market, the food waste, the fact that, you know, when you do corn and soya farming, you're not carbon sequestering anything because you remove the carbon goes into the plant, but then eventually you remove the plant. So then it gets released back into the atmosphere again. So you now have a practice. Then yes, I understand that animals fart and they make methane and blah, 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 like cows, okay? But animals are also vital for restoring the richness of the soil, which is the sequester of carbon. The biggest battery bank that we have of carbon is actually the ground. Life itself eats carbon. Plant life eats carbon. The fastest way to grow all that stuff comes from things. Like how many, you know how much fertilizer comes from cows that goes onto the fields that grow the corn, the soya, and all those different things? Like, you know how much chicken manure goes into growing food? You can't get rid of the animals. The animals are part of the ecosystem. But politically, that's not going to be the case, and we're going to see more and more challenges that come with farming and the politics around farming, and the price of food is going to continue to skyrocket. We are going to see inflation kind of ebb and flow. There's going to be dips. Like, it's going down already, apparently. But in food, I don't think that's going to be the case because of many of the different taxes and policies and the different things that are going on in the world of food, and also because of the retirement of farmers and the lack of skilled labor and the people who know how to farm. Now, are there ways around this? Does it mean doom and gloom? No, I think we're going to solve this in North America. We're going to solve this through immigration. We're going to bring in more people, and then we're just going to give them the low-skilled labor jobs. I disagree with that term because to farm, you actually have to be incredibly skilled, particularly if you're in polyface farming, meaning if you're growing a bunch of different stuff, like imagine like needing to know everything about making honey, but also needing to know everything about making garlic, but also needing to know how to prune fruit trees, but also needing to know how to sell the thing and run square and do the website, do all the blah, 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 blah. That's not low skilled labor. This is the hardest thing I've ever done.
That's a lot of skills. That's yeah. What that is.
Everything else that I do, like people who are accountants, fucking the AI is going to replace accounting. Yeah, accountants. That's all going to fucking be digital. What about copywriters? What about journalists? What about video editors?
Lawyers,
all
even.
Of that stuff. Yes, lawyers. All of these things are going to be replaced. So talk to me about low skill, because I don't think any of those things are low skill, but I don't think farming's low skill. You cannot replace farming and the physical process that is happening in the physical ecosystem with AI and digital things. Can you aid that? Yes. Can you set up automatic timers and different things? Can you have plants that literally hover over a field and identify weeds and zap them with lasers? Yes. Can you identify plants with technology? Absolutely. Can you identify the sickness or the disease of a plant with technology? Absolutely. But something needs to plant in the ground. Now you're going to say, well, the tractors are planting it in the ground. Yeah. But you cannot polyface farm with machines, and it won't come anytime soon. Now, maybe Tesla's humanoid-type robots or the different things like that, maybe those can help. Maybe we're going to see advancements, and I think technology will be an important part of farming, and it will continue to be an important part of farming. In fact, it led to the farm and agricultural revolution, where we learned how to farm with less and less input and less people's time, which meant we went from the rural population and a population where most people had to be engaged in some way, shape, or form in farming, or very close to it, had very close connections to it, too. How many farmers do you know now? I think it's like only 1% of people produce 100% of people in the world's food. You know, so you're at least in North America. So the numbers are drastically shifting and changing. Technology will be a part of farming. It's an important part of farming. But I think we need to realize the merge between the digital world and tech and entrepreneurship and legal and a bunch of other stuff and talk about that. And then we also have to talk about the like carbon-based, like matter-based physical world. And so that's what this podcast is about. That's what this podcast is going to continue to be about. We're definitely going to put more and more energy and effort into giving you updates about the farm. I'm going to try and incorporate footage from the farm. We're going to be making a lot more other content. We're also going to be clipping this and making YouTube clips and also reels and shorts and TikToks and all the things. Okay?
All the good stuff. All the good stuff. Yeah,
we're doing all of that, but that's what this podcast is about. So it's now the Valhalla Movement Podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, please hit that button. Find us on YouTube, find us on Spotify, find us on whatever platform you like to listen to podcasts. And know that every single time you hit like, share, comment, all your feedback keeps me going. I'm motivated as fuck to get this podcast going. I'm motivated as fuck not by how many people are listening, but by more importantly by how many people this may be inspiring and supporting. And so if you're one of those people, please let me know. And with that said, I think this does the end of episode 1 of season 9 of the podcast. So see you later, folks. And thanks, Leo.
No problem. Signing off.